While regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League here in just a moment. We are a little more than a month away from Chapter 35's numerous restrictions on the right to keep and bear arms taking effect in Massachusetts. So that'll be a good time to check in with Jim about where we stand in terms of the new training mandates, the new rules for firearm retailers in the state of Massachusetts, see if there's been any additional guidance coming from the state of Massachusetts. But I also wanted to get Jim's take on what happened in Newton, Massachusetts last week. This was where the pro-Israel demonstration was taking place. You had a guy who was, I guess, a pro-Palestinian guy who was across the street. Started shouting at these demonstrators, eventually ran across the street full speed, tackles one of these protesters or one of these demonstrators. As it turns out, this guy was armed and the assailant was shot. But the guy who was defending himself was arrested. Now, both individuals are facing charges. The guy who was shot is in the hospital, but he's facing assault and battery charges. But the individual who fired, who is not the initial aggressor, who was acting in self-defense, is also facing felony charges. He has received a lot of support from people in the community. A GoFundMe that's been set up has raised, I believe, over $200,000 for his legal defense. But I wanted to get Jim's take on the self-defense laws in Massachusetts, as well as whether or not this is a let's call it a teachable moment for non-gun owners in the state who may not think much about these issues. Now, all of a sudden, there's a pretty high-profile situation where somebody who was protecting himself could go to prison as a result. So I want to get Jim's take on whether or not this might be something that wakes up some non-gun owners in the state to just how ludicrous the laws regarding our right to keep and bear arms are in the state of Massachusetts. It was a great conversation. Take a look and a listen. Jim Wallace, thanks for coming on the show, sir. It's good to see you again.
Welcome back to the Second Amendment battleground state. You know, we've been saying that for a long time. But boy, if people didn't believe it, they should believe it now. Because, Wow, this is bad up here. This is bad.
It is bad. So we are, what, about 5 weeks away from all of these new provisions going into effect, right? We thought it was going to be August the 1st, maybe August the 2nd. And then on, I think it was July 31st, maybe August 1st, the state said, no. You know, these new training requirements won't kick in until, what is it, October 23rd? Is that right?
Yeah, it's something like that. It's either 22nd or 23rd. And what that is because they did not put an emergency order or attach an emergency order to the piece of legislation when it passed. Standard law, when it gets signed by the governor, is 90 days out. So a lot of that's to give the government or whoever time to figure out how they're going to handle a new law and administrate it. Well, 90 days is not going to help them in this case.
I was about to say, they're going to need a lot longer than 3 months here, right?
They have no clue how they're going to make this work.
Okay, so let's talk about this, right? We've got a little more than a month left. Supposedly, in late October, the new training mandates kick in order for you to obtain a license to carry, which also is required to keep a handgun in your home. State police says that they're working on this new curriculum. They said that back in late July, early August. Have we heard anything from the state police about this new training curriculum that's going to be mandated?
Well, it was interesting because a few weeks ago they came out and said, listen, we're going to work on this, but for now, just keep doing what you were doing. So until we get back to you, keep teaching the courses that you were teaching and issuing certificates, and we'll just accept them from there. The problem is, we asked when they said that, are the chiefs buying into this? And what we're finding out is some of the chiefs who are not very friendly are saying, no, that's not what the law says until you get a new certificate issued by the state, not the instructor, which is part of the change, then we're not going to even take your application.
So they're saying that right now. They're saying, don't bother because we're not going to issue you
Yeah, just a few. Some chiefs are doing it. Some chiefs are not. And that was my question when they issued this statement. And I said, are the local chiefs on board? And apparently they were not. So it depends upon which town you live in as to what the requirements are right now. And that's only just one piece of this. So.
Right. Okay. So one of the other aspects of this is what are folks going to be able to sell? You know, if you're an FFL in Massachusetts, the chapter 35, the devil's snare, as you guys at Goal call it, it has a new definition of firearm, right? And on paper, it makes sense. Massachusetts law previously defined firearms as basically handguns. Long guns were not defined as firearms. Now they are. But that means that in order to legally be sold in Massachusetts, all of those long guns now have to be certified for sale, which means they have to undergo independent testing, right? And then the results of that test have to be sent into the state police then certify every maker model as on the roster and available for sale. How's that going to work in 4 or 5 weeks, Jim?
They have no clue. Not a clue. Okay. The other issue with that,
yeah,
that the Gun Control Advisory Board used to just look at the test reports. That was pretty much all they did. Look at the test reports, recommend to the secretary, yep, this looks good, put it on the roster. Or sometimes we would send it back for more information. And I actually sit on a Gun Control Advisory Board. Well, it's now going to be the Firearms Control Advisory Board, but there's a whole new cast of characters. And I guess I'll still be on there, but now there are just people appointed by the House Speaker, the Senate President, so you can just imagine who they're going to put on there. And the rules have changed according to this law, both with that body and the Secretary of Public Safety, that they can pretty much do whatever they want with the so-called approved rosters. So they can wipe them out and start again. They can put new restrictions on how things need to pass. They can call anything they want an assault-style firearm, which is the new term. So it's anybody's guess. But the interesting thing is, at any time, the governor could actually sign an emergency order and put this into effect. But I'll bet dollars to donuts that behind the scenes, her administration is telling her, please don't do this, because we have no clue how this is going to work. Even the retailers now, if they get new inventory in, they have to now register their inventory. Never heard of that in this country. So retailers now have to register their inventory.
With the state of Massachusetts.
Right. So I posed the question the other day, retailers, because they're both federally licensed and state licensed, can make good money selling what I will call non-compliant guns to people around the country. Okay, now they have to register their inventory. Can you register a non-compliant gun? And they just looked at me and said, what do you mean? I thought the question was pretty clear. Can you register a non-compliant gun as part of your inventory? And they didn't have an answer. So the other thing is shipping. Under the new laws, as of whenever it takes effect, October 23rd, all of the common carriers have to have a gun safe in their truck if they're going to be transporting inventory. And that even includes unfinished receivers, whatever that means, because there's not a good definition as to what that is. And by the way, if you read the letter of the law now, a block of whatever, aluminum, that's an unfinished receiver for an AR could literally be deemed an unfinished machine gun. Because the unfinished receiver for an AR could technically be the same unfinished receiver for an M16. Or an M4, or whatever you want to call it. So we know that the common carriers are not going to comply with that. So what are they supposed to do for inventory? Even if they find something they can have. The other piece with that is they took the federal language on serializing guns, word for word, and put it in mass law. Now, we had been telling them for years with a lot of stuff, just use what the feds use so there's no conflict. However, nobody's ever paid attention to the federal serialization rules because it says it must be placed in a manner that it cannot be easily obliterated or changed. Well, having been a machinist in my past life, that's impossible because if you can access it to put it there, you can access it to destroy it. So the feds have never enforced this ever. But now will Attorney General Campbell, as an activist attorney general, decide that they're going to enforce this? Don't know. But if they do, that means there isn't a gun in the country that meets that standard. So it's a devil's snare.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so I want to go back to this, the emergency declaration that so far Governor Healey has not added to Chapter 35. And we talked about this before, because there's also this referendum process underway, right? I believe it's October 20th or the 21st is the deadline to submit 50,000 signatures to put a repeal of Chapter 35 on the ballot, not this year, but in 2026. The way the law works, tell me if I'm wrong on any of this, Jim, but the way the law works is once this has been put on the ballot, once it's been, you know, it's cleared, it's going to be there for voters 2 years from now, then the law would be suspended from being enforced unless the governor includes this emergency a declaration, right? Which would, in essence, take away the ability to suspend the law. She hasn't done that yet. And right. I know the last time you and I talked, you said you thought she would. In fact, she has said, oh, there's no way that I'm going to let this law be blocked, right? So she's indicated that she will sign this emergency declaration if she has to. But as you say, that puts the law into effect right away, right? And then that opens up all of these cans of worms that the state right now is trying to kick down the road.
Well, that also makes it more of an emergency. I mean, we have one federal case already filed. There's more in the works. And it would be even more important for the federal courts to act to put injunctions on all of this until it's figured out. Because right now, the state can't answer any questions. But then if you go back to Mike Day, you know, the so-called architect of this garbage, he keeps saying, oh, Gold's exaggerating. You know, don't listen to them. This is just about a few little things. And they just don't have the knowledge to read the bill correctly. And it's like, you know, I've written more law than that guy will ever write. But anyway, they have no idea what they've done. And that's why I tried my best to get a hold of Maura Healey, because I know her, before she signed it, because I can almost guarantee you she has no idea what she signed into law and the effects thereof. And even different agencies, for instance, Fish and Wildlife, hunting season is upon us. And I have asked Fish and Wildlife, have you warned the hunters, both resident and non-resident, what's in this bill, what's in this law? And they said, well, we're still trying to really get a good opinion from environmental law enforcement. And, you know, we might try to post something online. That's not good enough, especially with non-residents, because it bans anyone under 18 who's a non-resident can't hunt en masse. And if you're an adult non-resident, you can't use a semi-automatic anything. In Massachusetts, coastal duck hunting is a huge draw for non-residents. Well, all of those duck guns, you know, $3,000 semi-automatic duck guns that only hold three rounds, they won't be able to. And even that, I had somebody from public safety tell me the other day, well, that's not really true. We think if they get a non-resident license to carry, they might be able to. But that's the license to carry for a non-resident is $100 for a calendar year, not a year, a calendar year. And it's going to take you 8 to 10 months to get it. And your first time, you actually have to appear in person.
Right.
Interview. So who's going to do that? And then even if they do come in, they get all of this put together, then they have to register their guns with the state of Massachusetts before they come in. So, but don't worry, it's just a few things about ghost guns and live fire.
Well, thank goodness the state has finally taken action against the juvenile duck hunters who are committing so many crimes in the state of Massachusetts. Jim, that's all I can say. My God, we can all rest easy tonight.
Those 15-year-old pheasant hunters have been a scourge in Roxbury, and darn it, we're going to do something about it now. It's just, it's insanity. And even reenactors, because it's the season, they took away the, not the grandfathering, but the exemption for black powder guns, the ammunition part, the black powder, the ball, the cap, everything used to be exempt. Not anymore. So reenactors, if they're coming into the state in order to handle the black powder, will actually have to get a non-resident license to carry. So, matter of fact, one of our folks that's involved in that said, you know what, in order to make a statement when Lexington and Concord have their anniversary this year, we should just go out with Super Soaker squirt guns just to make a point. And I said, that would be cool.
And, 2025 will be the 250th anniversary of Lexington and Concord. So, I think it's actually a pretty good idea, because part of the trouble is raising awareness of these issues, right? Gun owners, frankly, not every gun owner in Massachusetts may be aware of this, but certainly non-gun owners, I think, are completely unaware for the most part about what's going on. I've seen a couple of reports I would describe as close to decent, but they're mainly coming from Western Massachusetts news outlets, right? I haven't seen, I hate to say it, but I haven't seen any real reporting on the issues here that you've been raising in the Boston media. Maybe one story like 6 or 7 weeks ago, but nothing, that's really germane to the stuff that we're talking about here. So, I think it is incumbent on you and I and other gun owners, not just in Massachusetts, but around the country, to talk about these issues here. And, there may be an opportunity. When we saw this incident last week in Newton, Mass. Newton, by the way, I haven't written about this, but Newton was one of those towns that tried to zone out gun stores. They did not want gun stores operating inside the community. There was a big complaint a few years ago about a gun store that was going to open downtown. And there were some, NIMBYs coming out. No, we don't want this in our town. Our kids are going to have to walk past the gun store to go to school. They're also walking past a recreational marijuana dispensary. That was okay with the parents, right? That's fine. Anyway, and neither here nor there. So you've got this pro-Israel protest. There's a pro-Palestinian guy across the street. He's jawing at the protesters. He eventually runs across the street, hurls himself at one of these protesters, throws him to the ground, and is assaulting this guy. The guy, I don't know if he drew his firearm, if the gun accidentally went off, but the attacker was shot. Mm-hmm. Now the attacker is charged with assault and battery, but the guy who was assaulted has also been charged with felonies, felony assault and battery, and I believe assault depriving somebody of their constitutional rights. I think it was a weird charge. And, you've got so many folks who are eyewitnesses who've said this guy was defending himself. There's video showing this guy was not the initial aggressor. I'm curious, is this, it seems to me like this is a situation where there probably are a lot of non-gun owners in Massachusetts looking at this saying, why the hell is this guy facing charges? What's going on here? What's up with the gun laws in our state?
Exactly. And, this is the culture. This is something that I've been talking about since the incident happened. The fact that he even spent 1 minute in jail is just beyond belief. I can understand an investigation. You have to do that. You have to figure things out. But the fact that he was put in cuffs, he was attacked. I mean, viciously attacked. And, if you look at the video, the guy was trying to slam his head into the pavement, to take him out. So one of the things in Massachusetts is, and I actually spoke at Suffolk University a couple of years about self-defense. And believe it or not, the students in the class said, well, Mr. Wallace, it's all, good. But if you have a gun and the attacker doesn't, that's not fair. Huh? What? What do you mean fair? And And I said, listen, we need to change things a little bit here. In Massachusetts, the culture is if you're attacked, well, you have to use, you know, equal means. No, no, there's no such thing. It's like a country that attacks the United States. Are we supposed to, okay, you got three tanks. Okay, so we can use three tanks. No, we need to change the culture. And I said this to the class, that 911 should be the rescue call for criminals. Because until the police show up, you got no rights. I don't know anybody named Miranda. I don't care. You attacked me and maybe my wife. Anything I have in my possession to take you down is fair game. You started this. You entered into my life with violence. What comes your way? Your fault. And that's the culture we need to change here, because it doesn't exist.
Yeah. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I took a look at the self-defense statutes in Massachusetts, and you're right. The prosecution only has to prove basically one of three things in order to disprove a self-defense argument, right? But I don't know that the prosecutor is going to be able to do any of that in this case. They've got to show that the force that was used was disproportionate. And I would argue, again, when you've been thrown to the ground, as you say, he was trying to smash this guy's head on the pavement. Just the initial tackle and being thrown to the ground, that could have killed this guy, depending on how his head hit the pavement, right? So to me, that does present a deadly threat to your life. You are entitled, in my opinion, to use deadly force to defend your life under those circumstances. The individual who was charged, Scott Hayes, clearly not the initial aggressor. He's on the other side of the street when this guy comes barreling across the roadway and jumps in the air and tackles him. The third element, I'm blanking on what the third element is, but again, I think it's going to be very difficult to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Scott Hayes was not in fear of his life when this guy assaulted him. And the fact that, you know, the guy who assaulted him has also been charged, to me, I mean, again, I haven't talked with the DA in Middlesex County, but to me, this it's sort of dismissive, right? It's almost this attitude of, well, I don't really want to figure out who's to blame, so we'll just go ahead and charge both parties.
Well, it goes back to when Martha Coakley was attorney general, just prior to Maura Healey being attorney general. We had an incident in a hospital where a woman doctor was viciously attacked by a psychotic patient who was stabbing her. And thankfully, there was an off-duty armed security person in the hospital, and he took the assailant down. Rather than singing his praises and calling this person a hero, Martha Coakley went on the media and said, well, where the outcome was good, fine, but we really don't encourage self-help. Those were her words. We don't encourage self-help, really. But that's the problem we have here in Mass, is that the assailant is the victim. Always has been in Massachusetts. And we need to change that, because they're so brazen. I mean, look at what this guy did. Literally ran through traffic to attack somebody with nothing in his head that, boy, if I do this, I'm going to be in serious trouble. Nope, didn't care. So we need to change that culture. It's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But we need to do the best we can. Just so people know, too, we have reached out to Scott Hayes and in offer assistance. And I know the NRA through us has done the same. So if he needs any help, but we desperately need to make this front and center, as you have the right. And, you know, I came up with the phrase years ago, self-defense is a human right, which the other side hates badly. But that's okay. You have the right to defend yourself. And you have the right to defend others too, period. And this was a clear attack. So he had no idea. When he was tackled to the ground, he had no idea what was about to happen.
Yeah.
You know, didn't know if the guy had a knife, a gun, or whatever. So the fact that he showed restraint, and then, if I'm correct in what I saw in the videos, he actually tried to render aid after he shot the guy. So he clearly was not trying to kill somebody. He was trying to neutralize a threat. And that's what people don't get, is neutralizing the threat. So
absolutely. Well, again, there is no shortage of things to talk about in Massachusetts. And I know we'll be talking again very, very soon. Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League. If folks want more information, I know that you're constantly updating the website at gold.org about Chapter 35. Is that still the best resource for folks? Just go to gold.org and hit the Chapter 35 page?
Absolutely. Yep. And if they want more on the petition process, under the laws, Gold got the petition process started. We drafted the petition, got the initial 10 signatories. But then by law, we have to hand it off to an official committee. Mm-hmm. So they have a separate website now. It's the Civil Rights Coalition.com, I believe. So go there if you're interested in learning about the petition itself. And I will tell you that on the petition, the Secretary of State, with the help of the Attorney General, with any petition, has to put a description of what the petition's about.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a gloss over if you read this thing. I've told everybody that if I wasn't doing this and I read what they put there, hell, I might support that. It looked okay to me. They absolutely denied, refused to put any of our concerns in their description. So once again, here we go.
Yeah, the deck is stacked, as it has been for some time. But you gun owners in Massachusetts are not giving up. You hopefully will be seeing a lot of support both in-state and from out-of-state gun owners as well. We'll be talking again very, very soon. Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League, thank you for your time today, sir. And thanks to Jim for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here very soon. All right, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder that central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage as well. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN when you text 800-405-GOLD. All right, now turning our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Bakersfield, California, where two men have taken some sweetheart deals that were offered in a shooting that happened last December. The shooting left one man seriously injured. Police say that it was the result of a quote, peace disturbance on Camp Street in Bakersfield. And on Monday, Santiago Lomeli pleaded no contest to attempted murder. His co-defendant, Fulgencio Ruiz Jr., pleaded no contest to assault with a firearm. As a result of those plea deals, Lomeli now faces 5 years in prison. That's it. 5 years. And Ruiz Jr. is looking at a sentence of time served and probation for something that almost resulted in a man's death, right? Again, attempted murder. And by the way, Lomeli's potential 5-year prison sentence, I mean, when you're looking at time off for good behavior, that 5-year sentence probably gets down to about 2.5 years, maybe less than that, for, again, attempted murder. The DA's spokesperson, Daniela Gonzaga, talked about the sentences that the two men faced, but didn't explain why the district attorney offered such a sweetheart deal to these violent offenders. And you know the next time, by the way, that we see a high-profile shooting in California, there's not going to be any talk by the Democrats in Sacramento to revamp the criminal justice system, to provide serious consequences for serious offenses. No. They're going to be talking about more ways to stop you and I and California residents from exercising their Second Amendment rights, right? Another crackdown on a fundamental civil right while the state refuses to get serious or tough with these violent offenders. Now, today's Armed Citizen story, this is an odd one. Not quite as odd as the aggressive groundhog good deed of the day that we had yesterday, thanks to John Petrolino, but still one of the odder defensive gun uses that I've run across in recent months here. Man naked from waist down breaks into home, get shot by homeowner, Missouri cops say. This happened yesterday at a home in St. Louis County. 47-year-old man arrested as a result of the break-in. According to authorities, the homeowners were asleep in their bed, and they woke up to see this guy standing over them, naked from the waist down. Now, scary enough to wake up and all of a sudden there's a stranger in your home. You wake up to a stranger who's half naked. Holy cow, right? One of the homeowners grabbed a gun, didn't fire a shot immediately, by the way, pushed the intruder and said, "You need to leave." According to the homeowner, the accused intruder said, "You'll have to shoot me," and then lunged at the armed citizen. Well, at that point, the armed citizen said, "Okay, I'll do what you want, I guess." Shot one time, hit the man in the chest. According to the homeowner, the accused intruder then said, "All right, man, don't shoot me no more," and then turned and left the home. Officers said they found the man in the backyard of the residence with a gunshot wound to the chest. He was arrested and charged with fourth-degree assault, as well as first-degree burglar. St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell said in a statement to KSDK that the homeowner was within his rights to shoot the accused intruder, saying Missouri law clearly provides homeowners with the right to protect themselves, particularly while on their property. Well, I'm glad to see that the anti-gun machinations of some of the St. Louis politicians have not gotten to the point now where, again, a clear-cut case of self-defense would be seen as a criminal act, as we were talking about with Jim Wallace there about the incident in Newton, Massachusetts. So, yeah, the homeowner in the clear, the suspect expected to recover from his injuries. Bond has been set at $250,000. He is, according to police, he entered the home through an unlocked back door. So just a reminder, even if you live in a safe neighborhood, you live in a low crime area, you live in a rural place, man, I don't think any of us live in a place where it's so safe we can keep our doors locked at night. Maybe until it's not. So why take that chance? Go ahead and keep your property secure when you go to sleep at night. Make sure you're checking those doors and windows. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A group of neighbors who came to the aid of a woman and her son in Cleveland, Ohio, saving them from a house fire. This was on Monday evening, about 5 p.m. According to WOIO in Cleveland, firefighters responded to that house fire with residents inside. But by the time they arrived, it sounds like the residents had gotten out there. Amanda Goddard says, "I turned around, I looked through my house, and it was full of smoke." She said, "I was in shock. I didn't know what to do. I heard somebody yell that there was smoke, there was fire. I looked out the window, and then everybody started telling me to get out of the house." She said her neighbors kicked down the door to get her 22-year-old son out of the home. They caught her as she leapt from the porch to get away from the smoke. She told WOIO that one of her dogs survived, and apparently another dog passed away in the fire. Home suffered about $100,000 in damages. Cause of the fire remains under investigation. The only person injured, a firefighter who was taken to the hospital for treatment of minor burns. But the Goddards themselves, okay, thanks in large part, again, to the quick thinking and the fast actions of their neighbors there in Cleveland. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, those anonymous Good Samaritans, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Want to thank you once again for checking out the show today. Looking forward to talking to you again tomorrow. But be sure to also visit BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We've got the trial over Illinois' Protect Illinois Communities Act gun and magazine ban taking place in East St. Louis. We've got Kamala Harris lying about the background check laws in the United States. We're covering those stories and more for you at Bearing Arms. Be sure to check it out. If you like what you see, also would encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA and you can get a significant savings on your membership. You'll get exclusive content. You'll get an ad-free experience. But you'll also be supporting the independent pro segment of journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And that is critically important in this day and age of big tech censorship and media bias. So thank you again for your support. Enjoy your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.